Blog Talk Radio.
Joe Biden won, and he is now the president of the United States. How wonderful is it that we don't have to turn on our television, turn on our radio, read through our newspapers, and see the name President Donald Trump? That is so invigorating that we no longer have to deal with that foolishness. However, everything is still not peachy, even though Georgia did play a decisive role in giving us the opportunity to have, and I'm going to use the word opportunity, to have the type of America that we are seeking. So today, Down South and Dirty is back. We're doing some different things over here. As of right now, there is no co-host. And we may add one later on in the season. But for right now, me and the team have decided that I'm going to give it straight to you, no chaser, no cut, what's coming off of my mind. And the things and how I see it don't necessarily feel the need at this point that is an absolute necessity for me to have a co-host. There may be one, because that's just what it is. One of the other things I'm going to desperately try, after talking to people for the last 2 months about Down South and Dirty and how the show is done and this, then, I'm really going to try not to cuss so much on Sunday morning. Okay, because, I mean, I got some of y'all who are sneaking and listening to me in church. I got some of y'all who, you know, are just would love the show, but your ears just can't handle it. So, and I'm an intelligent man. I can use my SAT words. Now, I'm not saying that there won't be anything that will rate me using a word here or there, but we're going to try our best in season 6. Yay, 6 seasons, to not be so profane on Sunday morning. You know, just out of respect for the listener and being able to grow the listener base, we realize that some people like the content, just couldn't handle the language. So we're going to try to do a little bit better. That doesn't mean that we're not going to hit hard. We're just going to hit hard in a way that uses more words from the dictionary than we may have used in the past. So that's that. This season, actually has a thing across the whole board. And that thing, I originally was going to change the name of the show to Down South and Rising. But I think that's going to be the theme of the show this season, is rising. Because we've been down in the dirt so long. We've been in the muck. We've been in the trenches fighting and resisting for the last 4 years, that we need to talk about things that are going to lift us up. But at the same time, still talking about the issues that are at hand, because there can be no Peachy King positivity rising up that without addressing the issues at hand. And y'all are going to be surprised, because there's a lot of things I've wanted to say, a lot of things I've wanted to do, and I've kind of held off on it just because I didn't want to scare y'all. But I'm going to scare you a little bit this season. I'm going to ask you to think a little bit more critically, because there's a lot of stuff going on that, even though there are other podcasts that are touching on it, nobody really digs down deep, because we are always trying to increase the listenership or the viewership of our podcasts and YouTube streams and this, that, and the other, that we sometimes don't educate you well enough by digging deep in, because everybody has to have their time on the mic. Everybody, we got the constraints, but we're going to take the time, as we've always done on Down South and Dirty, to dig in deep. Okay, so let's jump into this, because a lot of things have happened, and I'm going to try to follow my outline this morning. Some of you that have looked at the description of the show, you've been able to see it. And if you are listening and you have a comment, our guest call-in number is 563-999-3560. Again, that is 563-999-3560. Now, the first thing I want to talk about, of course, is the brand new Biden administration and what we were promised, what we're seeing, and what we're going to need. Okay, so there were a lot of things that were promised from the Biden administration. One of the things is we knew that my first priority was going to be COVID. We understood over the last year that the former administration did not take coronavirus seriously. They were not prepared to provide leadership, and it was just all around just a cluster. We had a really scant and uneven response to the pandemic that to date has us well over 400,000 deaths in this country, well on the way to 500,000. Several millions of us have contracted coronavirus, me being a survivor of COVID-19. Having COVID is no joke, people. There are lingering effects. There were nights while I was sick that I thought that I wasn't going to make it. But there were, and I tried to give a positive outlook to the people that I was talking to, because I didn't want to scare anybody, but there were nights that I actually thought that I might die. And that is still affecting me mentally today. The brain fog, all of that stuff. So COVID is serious, people. I was out campaigning and doing X, Y, and Z and this, that, and other, but I was always wearing my mask. I always tried to do the social distancing. It's not always possible when you are deciding to be around other people. I work a full-time job. And there have been several outbreaks in my place of employment. And we have to be mindful that even while wearing a mask, even with washing your hands, And in some forms of fashion, particularly since you work in social distancing, may not always be possible. If you spend the long periods of time around other people, you know, you spending 5-10 minutes somewhere, but if you're spending hours upon hours with people, your chances go up exponentially. And even with the mask wearing, the hand washing, this, that, and other, people will still get sick. This is why we need to take this even more seriously than we've taken it in the past, because what we've decided is that the almighty American dollar is way more important than human lives. The reason we are approaching 500,000 people, because we cannot disconnect ourselves. We could do things differently. We are still stuck in the mindset of the paradigm that I have to get up every morning and go to work, and if I don't go to work, I won't survive. And the thing is that we spend trillions of dollars in the United States every year for national defense, in subsidies to large businesses. We in the past have bailed out businesses. And in the process of that, doing those things, we feel like we can throw money at it all day. But when it comes to taking care of the American people, that is something that we have to negotiate. And I'm hoping while we have a Democratic trifecta at the federal level, that we can shift this paradigm to understand that, one, if the American people are dying and suffering lingering effects of a disease that we don't even understand what is going to happen to people who have had COVID, survived and recovered, what are going to be the impacts in a year, 2 years, 3 years? How is that going to affect us as a nation? If we don't take these things into consideration and shift this paradigm to taking care of the American people, we can very well find ourselves in a situation where our national defense is compromised, where our economic strength and ability to grow prosperity in this country is compromised, and having no real plan on being able to deal with that. So I'm calling on the brand new administration, be a little tougher than the last administration. There are ways, because other countries have went on extensive lockdowns, have done mandated masking and all of these things on a nationwide basis. Take the nations of New Zealand and Australia. New Zealand is clear from this mess because they handled their business. Okay? And the economy of New Zealand did not take that much of a hit. That was a Facebook post that I did earlier, because during this pandemic, I have studied economics just as a hobby, just to see how it affects things politically. We really don't understand what we think we understand. We have a tendency to believe that if we stop the economy, that if the economy stops, that it just can't start back. We have to understand that the economy is a man-made construct. It does whatever it is that we want it to do. If we decide there's going to be a bull market tomorrow, it will be one. If we decide that it's going to be a bear market tomorrow, it will be one. If we decide we want to infuse X amount of cash and that we don't want an inflation rate, we don't have to let it run amok. Controls can be put in place to make that thing do whatever we want to do at the rate we want to do it. This is my opinion based on the data that I've been watching for the last year, because we've watched everybody do exactly what they wanted to do. So we call on the administration to be a little tougher with COVID. That, you know, the administration ran, particularly, you know, in the Georgia runoff, we ran on an extra we ran on a $2,000 stimulus check. Now they're talking about a $1,400 stimulus check. I can kind of understand that we wanted two anyway. You got six, we're going to give you your additional 14 now, and you're still getting your two. The math worked, but that wasn't how it was explained. The way it was explained, that we were going to get $2,600. Now I can hear the folks on the right going, oh, you just want extra free money. It's not free money. The taxpayers of this country will eventually pay for this. Understand, it will eventually be paid for in some form or fashion. The thing is that the right want to continuously give us this watered-down idea of economics like it runs like your household. Your household cannot run on the levels of debt that the federal government has. If we even approach the level of debt that the federal government, you know, then the conservatives say, well, see, you're talking about deficit spending. All governments operate on deficit spending. The stock market operates on deficit spending. But we will talk about that when we get to the whole Reddit and GameStop and the short squeeze deal. We will talk about that later on in the show. But deficits are part. We run on deficits now. Most of us have a mortgage. We have car payments. We have insurance payments. Everything we're doing, we're floating cash out in front of ourselves in the hopes of getting the actual cash in liquid form to pay that debt off in the short term to continue to do long-term things. So everybody's doing this, but the Republican Party has wanted to play this little game with us, is that we should run our government like our households. And if most of us are thinking about that, we couldn't run a government because half our households are not running as efficiently as we would like to. So that whole idea is shut down. Stop listening to that bull, because it is a false narrative. It's made simplistic to so you can easily swallow it. Because if I brought you the complexities of how this actually operates, you're not going to listen long enough to understand it. So the Republican Party cuts you short and tries to feed their people, you know, because let's be honest about this. We've watched the opposition party, which they are now, operate over the last 4 years. They are not the brightest bunch in the doggone. They're not the brightest bunch. They're not the brightest light bulb. They are really susceptible to really simple conspiracy theories because they need to explain to themselves why the mechanisms of oppression and repression that they have attempted to put on us for the last 200 and something odd years of the American experiment are no longer working the way they used to. But the thing is that we all on the left understand that we're probably more intelligent than these people are. But the problem is we're not as cunning and cutthroat as they are. And the administration needs to understand that some of these people we're not going to be able to work with. And while we have a trifecta and we have majorities and we have the ability to move legislation to do the things that we promised that we would do over the last 4 years doing this resistance, can be done. But you are not going to get enough Republican buy-in because it does not fit their narrative. It does not fit the ideals of what they have in store for our country. What they want to do is continue to prop up white supremacy and white nationalism. Let's keep this clear and let's cut it straight to the chase. Because this is what they want. The reason why in America we can't have nice things is because white people do not want to share. They want to, and it's not all white people. I'm not, because some of you white people out there, you are just as much of a part of the exploitation ring, the minorities in this country. But what you've been fed is that you look like me. Therefore, you have I'm going to give you the opportunity to be like me, but that is bull also. Because, see, if I didn't exist, if Latinx did not exist, if all these other minority groups in which they love to put their foot in the back of their necks did not exist, they would come for you too. They would come for the trailer park. They would come for the rednecks. They would come for Appalachia. Because at the end of the day, power needs somebody to have power over. So there's not a whole bunch of wiggle room in there to work with these people. If we want to have true unity in the country, which the new administration has promised that is going to be one of their goals, then for there to be unity, there must be accountability to those who are not willing to unify with the rest of us, those who do not show loyalty. to the main idea. 80 million voters versus 74 million voters decided that we wanted to go in a different direction. This is a constitutional republic that is based on democratic ideas. The majority gets to rule. That means that the 80 million of us who voted for Joe Biden have a say that outweighs those who voted for Donald Trump. We want $15 minimum wage. We want Medicaid for all. We want good public education. We want racial equality. Then the other side has clearly shown that they do not want these things. So why are we talking to them? Because their whole point is to not give us what we want. They want to continue to prop up, and I'm going to say it again, white supremacy. So we voted and said, this is not the game we want to play. So we're not going to play it. So Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, all of your cabinet representatives, all the people who are in Congress, we voted for you to go to D.C. and make it happen. Stop dragging your freaking feet. Because what's going to happen is that 2022 is just down the street. Before spring is over with, folks are going to be announcing for midterm election. Reverend Warnock, you will be up for re-election here in the state of Georgia. They are going to be prepared to come for your next senator. Show you you're right, because you didn't win by a big margin. We eat this joker out. Now, the polls in Georgia are saying today that we're trending more toward people agreeing with Democrats, but Democrats are going to have to show they right. I'm a very loyal Democrat, member of our executive committee, but we're going to have to show you right. We're going to put it out there on the table. Then it's time for folks to eat. It better be good, because nobody don't like to sit down at a dinner table and you done told us, ooh, we having all this good food. And I'm going to break it to you like this. This is Soul Food Sunday. Y'all understand? We got the macaroni and cheese on the table. We got the roast. We got the collard greens. We got the cornbread, the black-eyed peas. There's some sweet tea and some Kool-Aid out there. Y'all understand where I'm coming from, because particularly ones y'all sitting in church, y'all thinking about that right now. Well, I'm going to go home and finna eat. You know what I'm saying? We don't even got a little table over there for the seafood lovers. We got the oysters, the crabs, and the lobster sitting over there. It's Sunday. We finna get down. And everybody ready. And you come sit at the table and the food nasty. Man, you know you made. So I'm telling you, Democrats, don't make the food be nasty. We at the table. We ready to eat. We ready to get down. We want some itis. So we got to perform. We can't be doing no milk toast, lukewarm. Oh, we scared to piss off the Republicans. They already pissed. We done seen this. They attacked the whole Capitol building on January 6th. Have you forgotten this? They already pissed. You ain't going to stop them from being pissed. Go do what you do. Give us what we done asked for. Or come 2022, people are going to sit at home because they're going to be like, you lie. You use me. And we had to work hard to get black folks to come out and vote, because we had, you know, because I'm not going to say that the people who are talking about, well, we need something for our vote. Y'all come for us and ask for us to vote, but you don't give us, yes, I want to see something. We've been had HB 40 sitting on the table forever and ever a day. Let this thing get passed. Let's have a reparations commission to study what it's going to look like, what is eventually going to be the outcomes. Let's get it done. Okay? Let's do this. We have way too many people who got elected based on we're going to do what you asked us to do. Every black person asked to represent, and people told us, yes, I support this. Let's see the support. Because we tired of getting lip service. So I'm asking the Biden administration to get about the business of governing. and governing for all of us. We've seen executive orders that put in place things for immigrant populations. Yes, I support my immigrant brothers and sisters, whether or not they're from Latin America, the Caribbean, Africa, Asia. But what about the native born? What about all of us who are minorities, particularly black people, who have been here since 1619, that picked your cotton, quarried your granite, suckled your children, fought your wars, and have remained steadfastly loyal to the United States of America? Where my executive orders at? Has there been an executive order mandating all police departments that have federal aid, federal monies coming into that they to continue to get federal aid and access the federal monies need to have body cameras? And they need to also have training on racial respect. They need to have training on understanding what protect and serve means. They need training understanding what my constitutional rights are and that those are paramount to any other thing that may be out there. I don't give a damn about, see, y'all making me cuss, but I don't give a crap about the crime rate and what you feel like you need to do if you are disrespecting and not allowing me to have my constitutional rights. Because what that does, it even makes me even madder. So I want to burn down more stuff. You sell us this crap, oh, we got a high crime rate, so we got to do what we got to do. No, you don't. The Constitution overrides all of that. I promise you, if you gave men and women their proper respect as human beings and you did right by them, then there's no need for me to go out there and cut up. If there were jobs and real opportunity out there for African Americans in this country, the crime rate will drop. We see it every time that prosperity in this country rises, the crime rate drops. So what that tells me, if I got money in my pocket, I'm good. But if I ain't got money in my pocket, I'm not good. And I'm going to do what I need to do to go get my money, because at the end of the day, it ain't about me wanting to wear sneakers and ball. Most people are out here trying to eat. Biden administration, make it happen. We celebrating the fact that we have an African American South Asian woman as Vice President of the United States. I always enjoy seeing people break barriers. But now that you've broken this barrier, Kamala, you need to go talk to Joe. You know, Austin Scott, you're the first black man to lead the Department of Defense. There's so many African Americans that are in positions first. There are Native Americans that are first. There are Latins who are the first. Y'all better get to Joe. Tell him that your people want something. And they want it now. Screw this bipartisanship, because they don't do it with us. That at no time during the 4 years did they say, hey, let's go talk to the Democrats as we lock little children in cages, as we ban Muslims, as we call African nations and Caribbean nations shitholes. Now, I can say that because that's a quote. The man actually said, there was no discussion with us. They had no respect for us. Their job was to come in and totally dominate the situation and push their agenda. Let's have some kahunas and go make it happen. Because if we squander these next 2 years, they will get control, back control of one of these chambers. And then we will have divided government again, and we'll be talking about we woulda, shoulda, coulda. Is it that your child just love having the ability that we getting stumped so you can just raise money? Is that what it is? Because guess what? I have a tendency to want to donate more money when we're winning. because then that allows me to make my position solid. And this is almost a great segue into the whole Reddit revolution thing, because we have it messed up in our head what winning and losing looks like. We have it screwed up in our head. But before I go there, there's one other thing that I really need to harp on that Congress needs to make sure happens. Because if we don't make this happen before the end of the year, or we're going to take a butt whipping in every state that we flipped. And that is, we need to pass the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. There needs to be something that will stop. Because the Republicans have realized this, we will vote. So they're going to do there's going to be some voter suppression. Here in the state of Georgia, our legislature is trying to figure out ways to where we have to provide ID with our absentee ballot. They want to make sure that they limit drop boxes. They want to limit your access to the absentee ballot. Because these are things that allowed us to get the margins we did to win. Mail-in voting, they are scared of that, even though it was something that they envisioned first to help their people out. The game changed. Now they want to change the rules because we've learned how to play the game. There needs to be passage of the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. It needs to be something that y'all pushing now. And I understand y'all trying to get Trump. And I fully agree with the fact of impeaching him. And I've been on the fence on this. But I read something the other day. And most of you who've listened to the show over the last six seasons understand that I'm somewhat of a historian. And those of you know me good, that I studied the German language, and I'm very interested, and I pay a lot of attention to German history, particularly the era of when Adolf Hitler came to power. Let this be understood. Adolf Hitler, in 1923, was placed in jail. He was in prison for sedition and treason. German law at the time did not have a provision to keep him from running for office again. When Adolf Hitler got out of prison, he started rebuilding his political base. He got elected to the Reichstag. He became the Chancellor of Germany. And the Chancellor of Germany is very much like the Prime Minister of Great Britain. They had a head of state, which was the president. And I believe at the time it was Bismarck. Somebody, I don't know, but Hindenburg. Hindenburg was the president of Germany at the time. Hitler used his political power to make Hindenburg even more of a figurehead, then eventually took Hindenburg's powers away from him. And then when Hindenburg died, he combined the office of president and chancellor and became the Führer. We all know history from that point on. We ended up fighting World War II, which millions of people around the world died. We had the Holocaust, in which 6 million Jews and millions of other ethnic minorities died. And another thing, so black folks, I always understand that y'all go, well, that has nothing to do with us. Now, I've learned something very interesting. Through the pandemic, like I said, I've been doing a lot of reading and studying and watching of things. There have always been black folks in Germany. And the Nazis didn't like them either. Now, in some cases, just like even with the Jews and Gypsies, there were certain black people that provided themselves to the state as instruments of propaganda. They were exploited and used. So, yes, there wasn't a whole bunch of them. I think during the Nazi era, there may have been maybe 10,000 people of African descent in Germany. There may have been close to 100 who were actually African Americans, people who were born in America, who moved to Germany to go to school during the 1930s, because at that particular time, you know, you couldn't get the type of education, particularly in engineering, in the United States that you wanted because of segregation. They could get it in Germany. And but after Adolf Hitler came to power, they were stuck there. And they were watched very closely by the Gestapo. And the reason that they didn't go around and executing African Americans because they were going to use it as propaganda against the American government when they invaded the United States and use it as a method to get African Americans to rise up against white supremacy here in the States, therefore effectively breaking the back of our country. White supremacy knows when to use you and when not to use you, and that's the thing. We still getting used. So I'm asking Democrats, since we are supposed to be the party of diversity, big tent tolerance, and racial equity, get to the business of making that statement reality. Let's move on and let's talk a little bit about this here. Short squeeze, Reddit resistance, Reddit revolution, however you want to call it. And this very closely ties into voting here in the United States. Because as I said in the last, you know, part here about the new administration, I just talked about the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, and because we figured out how to vote and use the systems of voting and use our laws to actually gain majorities, that they want to change the rules. We watched this same thing take place in the market. Multi-billion dollar hedge funds have been playing casino economics with the stock market for years. They short sell, they bet against companies, hoping that they fail so that they can make money in the failure of that, and then, you know, increasing their wealth. We watched this week as the stock market became democratized. And the little guy said, hey, we see you. We don't think this is right. So we're going to run the board on you. The little guy ran the board. One hedge fund actually is having to file for bankruptcy because they couldn't cover their spread. And this is one of the things I learned about economics during the pandemic is that, again, like I said in the new administration segment, a lot of what we do in our economy is floated on debt. We are using money that we've not yet made to procure goods and services and even create more wealth. But at some point in time, the debt gets called. And the goal is to have made enough money to be able to pay off the debt and still make a profit. So what happens in the short sale is they drive the price down. They drive it down. They drive it low so it's easier to buy. So then that's what they was doing with GameStop. They were driving the price low so they could buy up the stock. Therefore, buying up the stock, if a hedge fund buys the stock and they get enough stock, they get a certain level of control of that company. So then they're able to, if they get control of that company and they decide, hey, we're going to do a takeover or whatever we're going to do, then they can make profits, you know, splitting the company up, selling off its assets, doing whatever they need to do. And in the process, that's how they're going to make their profit. They're going to make the profit. They have learned how to make profit by making businesses, taking businesses that are under stress, keeping them from being able to raise capital to be able to work their way through the difficult points in their existence, and then they profit off of it. The same thing they do to poor people every day. They will get us to remain poor. They sell us goods and services at an inflated rate, and they make profit. Well, we decided this week as a people, nah, it ain't happening. But what happened was that the system decided at some point, hold on, we got to stop this. And they stopped us from being able to trade. They changed the rules mid-game. We were driving up the price so high that they were having to do sell-offs to try to recoup some of what they had to be able to pay the debts, because these debts are floated on really short term. I don't know. I have not yet figured out how short a term these debts are floated out there, but people are floating billions of dollars that have to be paid off in a very short period of time. So these people got scared. They started selling, and as they were selling, we were buying, continuously driving the price upwards to the point that some of them could not recover. Now, the app Robinhood, which I have Robinhood, I had money there, and you know, I don't have a very large position in my portfolio. I put money there just so I could see how the market fluctuated, and I could watch it, and I could get an understanding. I was playing really low dollar. And the only reason I even paid it any attention was that, again, like I said, I've been studying economics and how they are connected to political situations since the pandemic started, because I wanted to understand, since everything was so wrapped into how we responded to COVID, dealing with our economy and the markets, and just I wanted to see in real time how this operates. And so I hadn't paid my Robinhood account any attention. I just let it do what it did. If it rises, it falls, just it does what it does. But I looked the day after the inauguration, I decided to go look at my Robinhood. And it hit triple. And I started looking, what's going on? One, I trade a lot in cryptocurrency. And all the cryptocurrencies were doing better than they normally do. But there was also a couple of stocks. And I'm not going to mention what stocks they were, because I'm not a broker. I can't give advice. I don't want anybody starting to make a run on anything based on anything I said, because my premise is based on my limited knowledge. But there was an increase. And I've been watching friends who were talking about certain stocks, and I was like, okay, I'm going to see where it's going to go. I'm just going to sit here and wait to see where it's going to go. The day that all this stuff started popping, I'm working second shift now, so I decided I was going to sleep in a little bit more that morning. And when I woke up, I seen all of it breaking loose. It was hitting the fan. And I jumped in as quick as I could with what I had, and I actually made a little profit off of it. It wasn't much. I made enough profit to probably, have a really nice dinner at a really, really, really expensive restaurant. Because, like I said, my position wasn't that. My position was a real small dollar. But the fact that, the CEO of Robinhood went on to several news outlets, out of them restricting trading on between 13 to maybe 15 different stock symbols, GameStop and AMC, Nokia, BlackBerry, COS, and a couple of others, American Airlines, all got restricted. You couldn't buy, but you could sell. And you could see the hedge funds driving the price down. It got as low as $7 at one point for AMC, and they were attempting to drive that, and they were doing a good job of driving down GameStop. But then the world went wild. Not only did you have the average Joe and Jane go up in arms, you actually seen the politicians go up in arms. Ted Cruz and AOC both were agreeing. Now, y'all have heard AOC talking about, I would love to work with you on this, but you tried to get me murdered, so I'm not fooling with you. You can go, you can kick rocks on that. But it has brought a certain level of unity because everybody's seeing themselves being screwed. And then that made me think, hold on, I've seen this before. If you want to look back at where the partisanship really became nasty in the United States, go back to 2007, 8, and 9, during the beginning of the Great Recession. Everybody was pissed in some form or fashion about the bailout, that the rich guys are not going to be allowed to take a hit like I'm taking a hit. I lost my home during the Great Recession. I had many friends who lost their homes during the Great Recession. So my biggest asset that I had was taken away from me because of market conditions that the large guys were not allowed to take. And when you got that type of rebellion sowing up, because if you look back at this point, this is the rise of the Tea Party. This is also the rise of Occupy. And they're both rising up for the same doggone reason. The left extreme is rising up because income inequality is rising. And we're blaming it on the right. And then you got the Tea Party rising up because they feel like they're paying taxes to bail out people that don't work hard, because this is what they're being told. These people don't work hard. You know, they don't do anything. And it's us hardworking Americans, white people, that are having to bail all these people out. We're having to take care of the rich folks and the poor folks at the same time. And this is not fair. You know, I can't trust the government, and they don't lock the niggas. And that's where they raise up. And then again, let's go back to Occupy side. Oh, the oligarch. It's the 1%. And we're all hating on the same group of people, but we're being told by different groups why we should be hating who we're hating. Because the 1% exists. I'm not denying that. This is no conspiracy theory. We saw it in real time operating on Thursday. We saw it in real time. There's no conspiracy theory there. Now we came together for a brief moment because you were fooling with my money. I found a way to hit the man in his pocket and make a profit for it. Oh my God, Robin Hood was for real for a moment there. We were taking from the rich and giving to the poor. Theoretically, because even the folks who were able to take and make gains in this, all of us, including myself, are better off than the average poor person here in America. Okay? There was nobody living in a homeless shelter I could surmise. It may be, there's exceptions to every rule. That was sitting on their smartphone running GMC and AMC, making a profit and moved out the homeless shelter Friday. Most of us were lower middle class, working Americans, upper middle class Americans who had a little extra money, some disposable income that we could use to play in the stock market. Poor people ain't got no money to play in the stock market. All of us had a little something, to go play in the stock market. Again, we showing the gaps in our income equality. But we saw the 1% say, oh no, we can't afford for them to do us like this. You need to stop it. And Robin Hood's excuses was that there was federal guidelines and regulations and fiduciary, policies that they had to follow. What happened was Robin Hood ran out of money. They couldn't cover our spread. We was running it up. And then people were deciding, okay, I ran this up here, I'm going to take some profit. And then it was like, oh my God, they taking profit. because that's the one thing the stock market does not like you to do. The stock market likes for you to, if you sell, take your profits and reintroduce it somewhere else in the market. The stock market is not made for you to go in, put money in, and pull out. This is why day trading is something that is regulated the way that it is, because it could cause an issue. And a lot of people, I don't think, don't understand is that the 1929 crash that started the Great Depression was people running on the markets to pull profits, try to pull out their money and save their money because the stock market was dropping. If everybody just held, which that's what they wanted them to do, is just hold, the market probably would have, you know, regulated itself and went back, because that's what they want you to do. They want you to put your money in and they want you to hold it. They want you to move it around, but they don't want you to put it back into the circulation. They don't want you taking that money and putting it back in circulation, because they are taking what we're putting in and they're borrowing against it. It's the same thing that they do in monetary policy. You know, our money is being floated. So we have, anytime people start calling in for the bet, calling their bets in, that makes the house a little leery. This is one of the reasons the U.S. dollar came off the gold standard, because the Federal Reserve note, which is your U.S. dollar, the greenback that you hold in your hand, at one time was redeemable for that amount of gold. And if at any point in time you had decided, back during the time period in which the U.S. dollar was attached to the gold standard, you could go in and literally ask for that amount of gold in exchange for that note. If that had ever happened and everybody decided to go call in for their gold, the government would have, our currency would have collapsed. So then they decided to make it fiat, which meant that's a whole different level of story there. We'll get to it one of these days, and we'll do a whole show about fiat currency and bring some people who understand monetary policy a lot better than I do. But all of this is being floated, and they were running out of money. So then they decided, hold on, we need to stop this. Now, that's a double-edged sword, because one, you're going to save yourself. If you're rich, you're going to save yourself. You're going to save yourself at the expense of poor people. But the other side of that story is that if that run continued, it could have possibly caused the market crash. And being is that even our wealthier Americans don't even necessarily understand monetary policy the way that they should, that was going to cause them to panic. And because they're going to first look out for themselves. And if that means that, oh, I need to lay off people so that my company can continue to make profits. Because this is the thing, if you're a publicly traded company and you have stocks, you are beholden by law to your shareholders to not allow that company to fail. This is why short selling kind of gets me, because you're betting on the company to fail and this, that, and the other. It's kind of crazy. But and it makes that company work harder, because now it has shareholders who are trying to kill it off. But your job is to try to make them a profit, and you work harder and you end up burning cash and this, that, and the other, trying to save yourself, because you have a legal responsibility to your shareholders. So these companies are going to move to try to make sure that they're able to turn a profit and not go bankrupt. Now, sometimes it happens way too fast and they can't save themselves. But when they can, that means that people get laid off. That means that cuts have to be made. All of these different things have to happen so that they save themselves. And guess who ends up getting hurt? People like you and I. We are the ones who end up becoming the casualties of these situations. So it was a double-edged sword. So I kind of understand why they did, but everybody did not, all platforms did not suspend their trading. And that there surmises that Robinhood probably was running out of money. Because, again, Robinhood is set up for small-cap folks, you know, people who ain't got a whole bunch of money. you know, is set up for the little guy. So they are not, you know, sitting on Goldman Sachs money. They're not sitting on Citibank money. They're not sitting on them type of assets. And things were turning more from assets into liabilities for them, and they needed to slow that down. Because you got to realize that they had to turn around and then do like $6 billion in fundraising just to be able to operate the next day. And then they opened up restricted trading. I know that you could only buy 5 shares of GameStop on Robinhood, and you can only go up to, I think, 115 shares of AMC. And then, you know, you watch the folks on the Wall Street Bets start pushing crypto. But when they restricted that current, when they restricted trading on the stocks, they started pushing crypto, and particularly Dogecoin. Now, Dogecoin was invented as a joke to show that cryptocurrency was at the whim of the people and the conditions around it. So you had this Dogecoin, and Dogecoin, when I bought into it, was fractions of a penny. And so I've had like 20,000 Dogecoin, as low as 1,000 Dogecoin, whatever. And every once in a while, somebody says something crazy on Twitter or does something that makes Dogecoin run up the pole. And every time it does it, you know, I buy in before it hits a penny. And it does whatever it does. When it starts dropping, I pull and I make a little profit. I did the same thing this time. But this was very, very interesting because they were running Dogecoin, and Dogecoin actually went higher than it had ever went before. It had never went above 5 cents. And it breached that 5 cent mark, actually made, I think, at one point as high as 8 cents. Now, for a lot of y'all, I'm like, 8 cents? You tripping over 8 cents? Think about it. If you had 10,000 dudes, do the math, people, and it went to 8 cents, you made like close to $1,000 right there. Money, when you put it in large volumes, means stuff. Pennies make dollars, people. So don't look at something side-eye because it ain't got dollar signs. It got cent signs inside it. Because if you buy a lot of stuff at 8 cents and it goes up to a dollar, you just made a whole bunch of money. And that is the one thing that everybody with Dogecoin has been hoping that will happen one day, is that that thing will hit a dollar. If it ever hits a dollar, it will be ugly like Bitcoin. It's going to be mad money being made. But what happened is that in Robinhood, you can do your instant deposits, which is basically if I put $20 in Robinhood today, that $20 is not instantaneously available as $20. But what Robinhood allows me to do is because they seen that I have I made a deposit for $20. They're waiting on the bank transfer, which takes between one to three business days. They're going to front me $20 for me to go ahead and trade, right? So when that $20 hits, they're gonna get their money. They betting on the house that I'm gonna put in my money. I'm putting money in. Obviously, I'm gonna put it somewhere with some money being made, right? Well, people were running, you know, their instant deposits on Doge. They stopped all cryptocurrency being able to be bought with the instant funds that they provide on stock. They never stopped it on stocks. They want us to continue to be able to deposit money in front of that money on stocks, but they got scared with doing it with cryptocurrency because cryptocurrency is very volatile. But then at the same time, you again stopped us from being able to make money. Because the small players like me were making $100, $200. The people who have really been putting in the Dogecoin, that's people out there who got, and Dogecoin does not have a ceiling like Bitcoin. There's only so many Bitcoin out there, which allows it to be valued at a different rate because there's a finite supply of it. Dogecoin did not exist like that. So you got people running the board with dudes. It could have very easily gotten out of control and caused them other problems. Particularly, let's say it went up to a dollar and you got somebody with a million dudes. They just got $1 million. They're going to pull, and let's say that was $3,000 worth of money that they fronted, which I think on Robinhood, I'm going to be fronted $1,000 a day. So let's say $1,000 a day, and they made $1 million. They pulled their $1 million out. Dogecoin collapses. Goes back down to less than a penny per. And they lose money. But they bailing themselves out in a way that they were not. They secured their own interest in a way that they didn't secure our interest. I had a mechanism to make lots of money at the time, and you stopped me because it was going to affect you. They don't do it the other way around. They will make money and affect us, but it can't go the other way around. So there's a lot to be said about that. Y'all following me? And if you are, if you aren't, you can call in. I know some of you are listening to me while doing other things and may not be in a position to call in. Send me a text message. Hit me up on my messenger on Facebook. But you can call in at 563-999-3560. That is 563-999-3560. But it's crazy. And so this weekend, the market, the market's, closed at 4 on Friday. So everything is after market. You're watching. AMC is holding steady. Dogecoin is rolling about $3 or 3 cents a coin right now. It's holding steady. It's not as high as it was. Let me go take a look at that right quick just to make sure that I'm giving y'all the right numbers of what's going on. Yeah, Dogecoin actually then dropped to like 2 cents. All cryptocurrencies down this morning. AMC, which I bought into, I've not been watching the GameStop like I was, but AMC is holding at around $13.45, and it's been fluctuating between $13.50. $13.40 over the weekend. Let me take a quick look at GMC. GameStop is rolling at about 312. Is right now GameStop is holding at $312.01. Is up 67% from closing on the 29th. After hours, it had dropped 4%. It's like right at $13. So there's a lot to be, there's going to be some watching. Come Monday morning, what's going to happen? Are we going to end up seeing another run? That's a big thing now that we got to be watching for as we go into Monday morning's market opening. So I'm going to take a quick little break here, and I'll be back.
We'll be right back.